You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. This is the Thursday edition, and just a heads up for those new listeners, we are on a summer schedule, so the studio and the department is closed on Friday, so I cannot give a show on Friday. I would like to, but when the studio is locked up tight and I can't get in, I can't give a show. I have I won't say a day off because I'm still looking at the news, but don't expect a show tomorrow. So I'll be back first thing Monday, raring to go. There are a couple stories in the news. I think I could have had six stories, but I wanted to pick the most important one and really cover it. What is the greatest national security risk to the United States and what the American people fear? What is it? It's nuclear proliferation, with the chance that a terrorist would get a nuclear weapon and explode it in a city in the United States, such as Dallas. But it could be any city. It's incumbent on any president, Democrat and Republican, or any other party. Their number one responsibility should be the safety and security of the American people and the defense of our homeland, the United States. And the biggest threat is a nuclear explosion set off by a terrorist, or for that matter, a rogue nation. That could happen if we had dozens of nations possessing nuclear weapons. Fortunately, there are only 9 nations today that have spent the money and time developing and now have nuclear weapons. The United States was first, Russia was second, or the Soviet Union was second, followed by the United Kingdom, France, China, India, Pakistan, Israel, and I always forget one. I'm of the opinion that Iran and, first, the Islamic Republic of Iran probably has one or more nuclear weapons. But the nation that definitely is trying to have a nuclear capability is North Korea. And the reason that's important is the connection between North Korea and Iran. Now, how did North Korea get these weapons? They got the weapons largely with the assistance of Communist China. I want you to think, how would a backward, poor country, a totalitarian regime, population of about 25 million, in a period of about 20 years, develop nuclear weapons? Only if they had help. The launchers that these missiles are launched from is a communist Chinese design. It's identical. So the technology, the wherewithal, the financial resources that enabled North Korea to go from not even having food enough for the people to feed their own population, people went starving, to now on the verge of having not only nuclear weapons, but a delivery system, namely an intercontinental ballistic missile system. They've been testing both. The difficulty is truly developing that intercontinental ballistic missile, but you also need to downsize or miniaturize the nuclear weapons. Now, I gave you that thumbnail background for a reason. It's expensive to both develop, produce, and maintain nuclear weapons. It's really only the largest countries that have the money and the resources to do so. Most nations have renounced the development of nuclear weapons. Japan, for example, if it wanted to, could produce nuclear weapons and the delivery systems. So could other nations, but only the nine that I listed have them. The danger is not so much from nation states, but that one or more of these nuclear devices, warheads, should fall into the hands of terrorists that then somehow, some way, probably by freighter, or maybe even having a missile, fired into Europe, the United States, or any other country. That's why the prevention of the spread of nuclear weapons and a nuclear arms race should be the top national security goal of the United States, and I think it is. Because of that, President Trump made it a top priority. We do not want the spread of nuclear weapons in the Far East and in turn into the Middle East. We don't want a nuclear arms race in Asia or the Middle East. Iran is sitting on not only petroleum reserves, but a large reserve of natural gas. They're energy rich in that regard. And what they want to become is the hegemon or the superpower of the Middle East. They threaten their Sunni Arab neighbors, principally Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Jordan, Arab nations, Sunni as their religion, the majority branch of Islam. Why Iran is not Arab, but Persian, and is Shia. Iran threatens the stability of the Middle East. Israel has nuclear weapons in the hundreds, 200 to 300 are the estimates. But they are a democracy or representative government, and they have not used them. But they're surrounded by, let's be honest, their enemies that do not wish them well. But the greater threat in the Middle East is by far Iran. Now, President Trump pulled out of the Obama nuclear agreement with Iran. Now, that was negotiated with other nations, including France, the United Kingdom, the European Union, and Russia. Keep that in mind. And he's reimposed sanctions. I agree with President Trump doing that. And just so you don't say I'm a Trump supporter, I'm not a Democrat or Republican. I did not vote for Hillary Clinton, nor did I vote for Donald Trump. But as a record, he's been in office now a little over 500 days, approaching his 72nd birthday in a week. He has a outstanding track record, as far as I'm concerned, in terms of accomplishment and results. And I dare you to name any modern president that's had similar accomplishments. Now, he's on the verge of going to Singapore to meet the North Korean dictator, Kim Jong-un, and try to negotiate or start the negotiations to make sure that the Korean Peninsula, both North and South, are free of nuclear weapons. And at least in principle, it appears that North Korea is willing to do that. Now, I want to make a point. There's a major player, though, that you need to be aware of, and that's Communist China. The major trading partner, some would say the only trading partner, but by far most of the trade North Korea has been with China. Now, China has agreed to the United Nations sanctions, and it has brought pressure on North Korea to denuclearize, in other words, destroy their weapons. And that's a matter of definition, but I agree with the United States position. It has to be verifiable for sure. It has to be permanent, irreversible, and there has to be people there when it's done, and it has to be monitored. Otherwise, we're not going to make the mistake, or Trump is not going to make the mistake of both prior Democrat and Republican administrations. Initially, many of them had a policy of carrots. They would give them incentives. But unfortunately, North Korea broke the deal. So President Trump is going there with his eyes open, with a team, including the Secretary of State and John Bolton, one of his national security advisors. And today at the White House, there was a press conference, and I'm going to play the press conference. It's not long, but it's important. It's Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. And there are some questions from the press regarding this upcoming summit and what led up to it. Let me play, and I might, depending on what he says, I've already heard it, but I might have some comments.
Good afternoon. It's great to be joining you all here today. Early in his presidency, President Trump made a commitment to address the threat of North Korea, which has been a threat to our nation for far too long. President Trump has been and continues to be committed to ridding the United States and the world of threats posed by North Korea's weapons of mass destruction and ballistic missile programs. These programs threaten our homeland, our allies and partners, and the broader non-proliferation regime. North Korea's past activities also make clear that it is proliferation to other actors that creates a risk in addition to the primary risks. It has supporting infrastructure that is also of concern. In early 2017, the Trump administration decided on a policy we have referred to as the Maximum Pressure Campaign. The campaign enacted the strongest economic and diplomatic sanctions against North Korea in history. The goal was to set the conditions for the DPRK to make a strategic decision to denuclearize as the best means by which it will achieve its own security. American leadership rallied the international community to send a strong message to Chairman Kim Jong-un and the world that we would not stand for the DPRK's illegal weapons programs. The President's bold decision to meet with Chairman Kim Jong-un grew from this incredibly strong and targeted campaign. The President's policy directly led to the historic summit that will take place on June 12th in Singapore. Back on March 8th, Chairman Kim Jong-un expressed his desire to meet with President Trump as soon as possible. And then on May 9th, I met with Chairman Kim Jong-un in Pyongyang and explained America's expectations for denuclearization. At the time, we also secured the release of three Americans, Kim Dong-chul, Tony Kim, and Kim Hak-song. We view this as a sign of goodwill from Chairman Kim Jong-un. The United States and North Korea have been holding direct talks in preparation for a summit, and North Korea has confirmed to us its willingness to denuclearize. A comprehensive whole-of-government effort in support of President Trump's upcoming summit is underway. White House and State Department-led advance teams are finalizing logistical preparations and will remain in place in Singapore until the summit begins. The President continues to follow every development closely and is getting daily briefings from his national security team. The fact that our two leaders are coming to the table shows that the two sides are very serious. The diplomatic model used to date is different from past efforts. Our efforts give us hope that we can find real success where past efforts have fallen short. President Trump is hopeful, but he's also going into the summit with his eyes wide open. We've seen how many inadequate agreements have been struck in the past, and you can be sure that President Trump will not stand for a bad deal. The United States has been clear time and time again. The complete, verifiable, and irreversible denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula is the only outcome that we will find acceptable. The President recognizes that North Korea has great potential, and he looks forward to a day when sanctions on the DPRK can begin to be removed. However, that cannot happen until the DPRK completely and verifiably eliminates its weapons of mass destruction programs. President Trump and Chairman Kim will certainly also discuss security assurances for the DPRK, establishing a peace regime and improving relations between our two countries. Until we achieve our goals, the measures that the world, alongside the United States, has put on the regime will remain. In the event diplomacy does not move in the right direction, these measures will increase. Throughout the entire process, the United States has been unified with Japan and South Korea in response to the threats from North Korea. I will be traveling to meet with my Japanese and South Korean counterparts after the summit to continue to coordinate with them. I will also stop in Beijing following the Singapore summit. I will provide them with an update and underscore the importance of fully implementing all sanctions that are imposed on North Korea. President Trump recognizes North Korea's desire for security and is prepared to ensure a DPRK free of its weapons of mass destruction is also a secure North Korea. President Trump has made it clear that if Kim Jong-un denuclearizes, there is a brighter path for North Korea and its people. We envision a strong, connected, secure, and prosperous North Korea that is integrated into the community of nations. We think that the people of the United States and North Korea can create a future defined by friendship and collaboration, and not by mistrust and fear. We believe that Chairman Kim Jong-un shares this positive vision for the future, and we are committed to find a path forward, and we assume and hope that that belief is sincere. We're looking forward to being in Singapore in just a few days.
I thought I had the questions on that clip. and I don't. I thought it was an outstanding, concise, clear summary of what has gone in the past and hopefully will go well in the future. And I wish the team, negotiating team, well, but you need to go with that phrase, your eyes open. I think the success or failure of the summit meeting will largely depend on the pressure that the communist Chinese put on North Korea. Now, if you listen to my show, I've had several shows on this. What I think happened, and we probably never, I won't say never know about it, but it'll be many years from now. Remember the name they're putting on this effort, maximum pressure. Yes, you need to put maximum pressure on North Korea. But who's in the best position to put maximum pressure on North Korea? Now, some will say the United States. I disagree. It's communist China. They're the ones, it's really their problem. That what happened is, in private, President Trump talked with President Xi and made it clear that the problem of North Korea needs to be solved, and the only nation that can solve it is communist China. In other words, you created the mess. It's your responsibility to clean it up. It's not in the United States to start a war, conventional or nuclear. We hope it never comes to that. It's certainly not in the interest of China, North and South Korea, Japan, and the nations in the Far East or in Asia. And that's one of the benefits of trade. The more nations are interdependent on one another and trade with one another, it's less likely that they'll go to war with one another. Because it's usually currency wars leading to trade wars leading to real wars. But the communist Chinese need to be, the United States had to pressure them. And I'm sure the pressure is in the trade area. And I'm willing to speculate that they were given some date certain, probably 1 January of next year, to make sure a mutually agreeable treaty between the United States and North Korea, where North Korea agrees to dismantle their bomb factories, their research facilities, their testing sites, both for the nuclear weapons and the long-range missiles. And if that does not happen, then the United States will impose a total and complete embargo with trade between the United States and communist China. That puts maximum pressure on who? Communist China. Because if that would happen, I'm not saying it will or will not, I don't think it will though, what would happen? You would have considerable unemployment in communist China that could very well lead to rebellion and over time the eventual overthrow of the Chinese Communist Party. You have over a billion people in China, and they have been very much benefiting from trade with the world, with the United States and with the European Union. So it's in the interest of communist China, the United States, Japan, the nations in the region, North and South Korea, to destroy those missiles and destroy those nuclear bombs. Not only verify it, but continue to monitor the situation. And if that happens, then North Korea would benefit, again, through trade. I hope President Trump is successful. I know there are many skeptics that do not believe he can pull it off. We'll see. No one said this is an easy job, being President of the United States. And Donald Trump is addressing, in my mind, the number one national security concern of the United States. Because if he's successful, what this does, indirectly, but not really that much indirectly, would affect the ability of Iran, the Islamic Republic of Iran, in the building of their nuclear bombs and long-range missiles. So to the extent that Donald Trump, his team, can truly negotiate a verifiable, irrevocable, irreversible agreement, I think everyone wins. I mean everyone, and that's what you want. But that's going to be a tough negotiation because from a North Korean point of view, the reason why they went for a nuclear program, remember, they're not a rich nation. They were afraid of the United States and its allies one day overthrowing them. So there needs to be rather concrete assurances that the United States will not, at some later date, together with South Korea, take advantage of the situation and invade. I don't think that would happen. But it's not what I think or you think or President Trump thinks. You got to convince Kim Jong-un and the regime. So that's why I say it's going to be a tough negotiation, and you're going to have to build trust. And that's going to be difficult because North Korea has broken, consistently broken, the deals that previous presidents negotiated in good faith, and then North Korea double-crossed them. So we'll hear more in the coming weeks. We'll wait and see. That's the only thing we can. And I do apologize for not having the questions. There were some. It seems that former Mayor Giuliani, now legal counsel to Donald Trump in the Mueller investigation, I'm going to get into that, made a statement that I think Pompeo said very clearly in terms of foreign relations, it's the Secretary of State and the President that speaks for this administration, not Rudy Giuliani. Now, in a related matter, and this may or may not have had some impact, who knows? Today, the Secretary of Commerce announced that the Department of Commerce negotiated with a giant electronics firm that makes, for example, smartphones. It's ZTE. They were sanctioned, and so they couldn't do business in the United States because they were doing business with Iran and North Korea, and part of the equipment they were selling them contained U.S. parts. Apparently, ZTE and the Commerce Department did reach a settlement. In addition to the fine that they've already paid, $1.4 billion, they have agreed to pay an additional $1 billion, as well as put in escrow $400 billion and have U.S. representatives in their plants to monitor that they're not breaking their agreement, and the current board of directors resign. That deal, or conclusion of the deal, was announced today by Secretary Wilbur Ross. I think the timing is not necessarily, I don't think this was a coincidence, folks, because that company has a close relationship, as do many companies in Communist China, with the government, the Communist Party. I think the administration, though, is not out of the woods on this. There have been national security concerns raised by a number of people, Democrats and Republicans in the Congress, including Senator Rubio, Senator Chuck Schumer, and others. And even some Trump supporters are critical of this. Can you trust them? We get back to that central question of trust. I'm not in favor of this deal, but I'll quickly say, although the administration has denied this, it's not part of some trade agreement. This is more or less a standalone negotiation. I think the reason why Trump or the Trump administration reversed themselves is you have a number of U.S. firms that were supplying parts to ZTE. They were, and I think we'll quickly resume, being the number four supplier of smartphones in the United States. So why? I'm not impressed that much with the $1 billion. Now, that's a big number, that's going to get attention, but to the extent that this firm is closely allied with the Communist Chinese government, it's not that much money. It's a large fine, and I'm sure they'd rather not pay it, but we have a good market. You better believe we have a good market, and they want to get back in it, but like I said, trade benefits both parties, and in this case, it did. What brought on all these sanctions was the fact that this company was supplying various types of equipment that they make to North Korea and Iran, and that included equipment that had U.S. parts. In other words, they violated the sanctions and traded with those countries when the United States had sanctions imposed on them. So we'll need to wait and see on this one as well, because you have leading Democrats and leading Republicans in the Senate and the House, and they've already proposed a bill that would stop this. Now, many of you, I'm sure, don't have an opinion, but I don't think it's necessarily a done deal, or it could be undone. That's a better way to say it. And it's definitely related to Communist China. It's the firm, that's where they're from, and the North Korea, in terms of, it's an example of the Communist Chinese providing equipment, technology, know-how to their allies, and North Korea is one of their major allies. Now, finally, and I debated, I've been staying away from this story quite a while, and what I'm talking about is Special Counsel Mueller's investigation, supposedly of Russian interference in the U.S. election and the allegation that the Trump campaign, Trump and his campaign, colluded with the Russians. Well, they have not disclosed and not found any evidence of that. President Trump has denied it, and now it's really, although they celebrated their 1 year of existence in May, the FBI hadn't been investigating that. This is really going on 2 years, and there's no evidence. Some smoke, but no evidence. They need to wrap it up. Again, I have been opposed to, as a general proposition, I do not favor special counsels. And only if the criteria of the Department of Justice is met should you really appoint one. We have a Department of Justice full of prosecutors and attorneys that can handle litigation as well as prosecuting criminal situations. And this is key. We don't know precisely what the charter, or if you will, the letter appointing Special Counsel Robert S. Mueller III, I call him Three Sticks for short, what was the crime he was investigating? Apparently it wasn't a crime. Was it a criminal investigation? Was it an intelligent investigation? It's important to understand that difference. Because under the Department of Justice's own guidelines, if you appoint, if the criteria are met, first of all, for a special counsel, you must specify the crime. And that wasn't done. And I think Mueller knows it for sure. So does the Attorney General Sessions and the Deputy Attorney General. And that's why I've always believed, and I'm not alone in here, that this was not a legitimate, it was an unconstitutional appointment. And that, I think, ultimately will end that investigation. Now, I recommend that President Trump should have fired two people, Mueller for sure, and the Deputy Attorney General that appointed him. Their conflicts galore. President Trump always mentioned this. Mueller is a good friend of James Comey. And it appears that some of the questions they want to ask pertain to this. You see, under Department of Justice policy, a sitting president, an acting president, namely President Trump, cannot be indicted. The remedy, if a president has done something wrong, and I mean seriously wrong, the remedy of removing a president is impeachment. Impeachment is a political process. It involves Congress, where the House of Representatives first must pass articles of impeachment, setting forth what the president has done wrong. It's strictly political. It's not a criminal proceeding. It's a political proceeding. And that requires a couple of things. First, that one of the parties in Congress has enough votes to get that impeachment bill passed. Given the fact that Republicans control the House today, it would never pass. And even if the Democrats get control of the House, it's not clear to me that it would be a wise political move to try to impeach President Trump. I know some of the leadership understands that. Now, the rank and file, they think the way to get rid of Trump is to impeach him. May I remind him, assuming you could impeach him and convict him, who's next in line? Mike Pence. I definitely are a supporter of Mike Pence. You better believe it. So what do I think is going to happen? And the reason I got into this, apparently someone leaked. We don't know who. Some are suspecting it's the Mueller team. I'm a little suspicious of that. Others are saying someone in the Trump, either legal team or administration, leaked it. It was the strategy. What happened is, and this was back in January, the legal team for Trump sent a 20-page memo outlining their positions. See, Mueller has been trying to convince the president to sit down and be questioned by his attorneys. I'm totally against that, but that's the president's decision. And the reason is very simple. He's trying to set up what's called a perjury trap to get you on the record to say things that they can, may or may not be able to, but usually they are, show that we're not correct, and then say you lied to them. That's why attorneys will advise you to say absolutely nothing to prosecutors, whether it's a federal prosecutor or a local district attorney. You don't answer questions, first of all, until you have your lawyer present, and you don't want to be in a situation that's stacked against you, and it is stacked against you. You see, what happens is, let's let's assume for a moment you're not president of the United States and you're indicted. They can question you in front of a grand jury. Now, you don't have to answer. You can say, on the advice of counsel, I refuse to answer that question under my Fifth Amendment rights. No problem with that. You don't have to give the prosecution the evidence. Because, ladies and gentlemen, it is up to the grand jury to decide whether or not to indict you. They don't have to do that. It's purely based on the evidence that the prosecutor presents. The reason why you can't truly indict, or for that matter, question in front of a grand jury, the president of the United States, he has a job to do, a serious job to do, and the president cannot be trying to defend himself in terms of lawsuits, whether criminal or civil. That's why the Constitution is written the way it is. And the remedy for removal of someone that's done, let's say, criminal things, is what? Impeachment by the House, followed by conviction by 2/3 majority in the Senate. And if convicted, we have never had one that's been convicted. We've had a president that's resigned, that's Richard Nixon, is removal from office. And then after a sitting president is removed from office, then he can be prosecuted. That's the important point. You got to understand, no one is above the law, or at least in principle, no one should be above the law. That's why a lot of Americans, including me, are very upset that Hillary Clinton got off scot-free in terms of her mishandling of classified information. There are more than 100 crimes, counts, that she committed. Several dozen secret, top secret, or higher documents that they found. She was guilty of sin, but the fix was in why former FBI Director Comey exonerated her, rewrote the statute, saying it required proving intent when the statute 793F does not require proving intent. And there were thousands of prosecutors that would have taken the case because it would be a slam dunk. She set up that server and she sent and received classified information, including classified information from and to President Obama. President Obama knew about it, didn't stop it. But they had to get her out from under an FBI investigation. The FBI director would not have done it, nor would the attorney general do it, unless it was okayed by President Barack Obama. Wink, wink, nod, nod. That was the situation. And we're waiting right today for that in the IG report that investigated how the FBI and the Department of Justice handled that. And that's coming out supposedly next week. I'll believe it when I see it. I heard it was first March, then April, then May. Now it's next week. I hope it is. But you got to remember something. That doesn't mean you're going to see it. Now, there should be leaks. And I don't think it's going to tell the whole story. You know, right now the big debate is, did the Obama administration, the FBI, spy on the Trump campaign? Well, they definitely surveilled the Trump campaign. What they're talking about is a human source. I've said the Cambridge professor, Stefan Halper, was an agent provocateur. Ultimately, if he were successful, I don't think he was successful, he could have spied on him. And I'm looking at the time. I can't get into all the details here. And I am somewhat astray. You need to keep separate the IG investigation that's coming out, separate from the Mueller investigation, that should be wrapped up in a report filed. But I don't think it's going to happen. And see, what I think is going to happen is this. Donald Trump will wait to after the November elections. And let's assume that the Republicans keep control of the House and the Senate. Then I don't see any way that the House or the Senate is either going to vote for a articles of impeachment nor convict them. Because up to now, there's zero evidence of that. You see, I'm of the opinion that Mueller really represents the establishment, both of the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, and they initially thought they could impeach him quickly and get him out of office. I think that was fantasy land. I think they're delusional. And they came up empty in the sense that you got to prove it. Hearsay, making assumptions, speculating, is not evidence. It's hearsay. And there's no evidence. If anything, the evidence is the other way. It's the Democratic Party, the Hillary Clinton campaign, that did conspire with Russians in preparing a disinformation dossier, the so-called Christopher Steele dossier, that was designed to, if it were successful, to smear Donald Trump. And that's unraveling, folks. More and more evidence is out. And I think more will come out when that Inspector General report comes out. In my humble opinion, the smart thing for Robert S. Mueller III, Three Sticks, is to wrap it up. Oh, you might get lucky and Trump agree to some rather narrow questioning, namely submit some questions and he'll in writing answer. And I frankly think that's the best you can do. I wouldn't recommend even that. But after the November elections, I think Donald Trump is going to say, enough is enough, I'm firing Mueller, and I'm going to fire the guy that appointed him, Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein. And most likely, if he did that, Attorney General Sessions would again submit his resignation, and this time Donald Trump will accept it. The only thing I think will change that result is if Attorney General Sessions finally appoints another special counsel to clear the name of the Department of Justice and the FBI by investigating what I call the Clinton-Obama-Democrat criminal conspiracy. That's the real conspiracy, not collusion, a real criminal conspiracy that President Obama led and directed using the intelligence community, FBI, NSA, CIA, to spy on who candidate Trump and then President-elect Trump. I got the signal. I got to wrap it up. I wish Trump had taken my advice, but he's smart. But I think he's getting fed up with Mueller. And that's the problem with special counsels. They don't know when to quit. And if anything, he should quit. Write his report. We found nothing, no evidence that Donald John Trump colluded with the Russians. And then call it a day. Thank you for listening. And now, America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. With a voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com. and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.